Hello everyone and welcome. I'm Amanda Goldston of LearnTarotOnline.com. In this tarot course, we're going to talk about learning tarot. I'm going to give you in this first section an introduction to my tarot course, which is called Develop Your Intuition Through Tarot. It's available as an ebook and also as a physical book. We're going to cover a little bit about our method of learning, and i.e. looking at the cards, the colours, the symbols, the pictures, noticing what's going on, what impressions and feelings come up for you. I'm going to give you a simple exercise on connecting with your intuition and a simple relaxation exercise to focus your mind and open up to your intuition, which are obviously extremely important when you're learning to read tarot cards. And in this first section then, we're going to cover the first 13 cards of the Major Arcana, which is the Fool card to the Hanged Man. For this learning, I refer to the Rider-Waite decks of cards, simply because I find they are the easiest deck to work with as a beginner. Because you can see the colours, the symbols, the pictures, you can see what's going on. So I would very strongly recommend that for the purposes of this course, that you get yourself a deck of the Rider-Waite cards, which you can get from Amazon or any good bookshop. We're also then going to cover a very simple three-card spread. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about one of the simplest methods of learning to read the cards, which is building up a story from what you can see. This segment is approximately 60 to 90 minutes long, so we've got a lot to cover, so we'll get started straight away with this. The tarot is a fantastic tool for tapping into your intuition, your creativity, for looking at yourself, understanding yourself, for looking at different outcomes and how you can impact and affect those outcomes. One thing I would say that is very important to remember when you're learning to read tarot, whether this is for yourself or it's for another person, the tarot is merely a tool and should only be regarded as such. It is a deck of cards, normally 78 cards, with pictures and symbols on them, broken up into five main sections, which is a major arcana, which has 22 main cards in it. Now, these tend to be cards that will have quite a significant impact on our lives. And four further suits, which is the suit of cups to do with emotions, the suit of wands to do with work and creativity, the suit of pentacles to do with money and earth and home-related matters, and the suit of swords, which is to do with air, willpower, and thoughts and things going on in our heads. Now, as we go on through the course, we will cover those in an awful lot more detail. The thing to remember with the tarot is that nothing is fixed. Yes, there may be things that come and hit us out of the blue that we really didn't see coming. However, we always have a choice as to how we react and how we deal with those situations. The tarot cannot give you any advice and it cannot make any decisions for you. It is an incredibly useful tool for you to connect with your own intuition, your higher self, the unconscious, the universe, whatever you choose to call it, to enable you to make better decisions for yourself. Now, the first thing I would say that is important when you start to learn the tarot is to set an intention that it is going to be easy. Just for the moment, take a deep breath, just relax and set yourself the intention that you will quickly and easily learn and absorb everything you need to know. You'll be able to tap into your intuition at will and know it will give you exactly the answers anytime and every time. This course, as an overview and how it's going to work, may well be slightly different from things that you've experienced previously in learning tarot. My belief is that we actually have all the answers within us. And we're going to be using the Rider-Waite deck to trigger your intuition, to trigger that inner wisdom. You may find that as we're going through, and I am giving you some of my definitions that I've used over the years, you may find that some of the definitions resonate with you, and you think, oh yes, that sounds absolutely brilliant, that sounds right. And you may find that other definitions don't quite sit with you, and that you have a thought or a feeling that the cards actually mean something different. And what I would say to you in that case is go with what you feel. Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is help you to build a relationship with your own personal cards. So that then when you pick up your deck and you've got a question or somebody else has got a question, your cards speak to you personally. So when you get flashes of inspiration or intuition or pictures coming through for a particular card, go with that because that will be absolutely right for you. Now, as we're going through the course, I'll be giving you the definitions of the cards that I've used, which are a very good starting point for you to build your own definitions and your own relationship with your cards. One of the things that we'll be doing as we go through this course is really looking at each card. So we'll take the card out of the deck or look at it in the notes on the picture. And just first of all, notice the colours, whether it's a bright yellow, bright sunshiny type of card, or whether it seems like it's a more cool, distant blue, or maybe there is a lot of black or white or orange. Notice, when you take the cards out of the deck, notice initially the colours. Look at the colours. We're going to look at the symbols. We're going to look at what you can see, what immediate feeling that you get as you look at each card, and just really then build our definitions and our interpretations from what you can actually see physically going on in the card. Now, this is one reason why I really like the Rider-Waite deck of cards, is because each card has a picture that is quite clear. You can kind of really see what's going on in the picture. And the number of times that I've done a reading for somebody, put all the cards down, and they've pointed to a card and gone, that's exactly how I feel. The reason for this is because pictures literally speak 1,000 words. And when you see a picture, it immediately connects with your own personal unconscious mind. So that the picture then can transmit to you the energy and the information that is relevant to you in this moment. So that's kind of how we're going to be learning the tarot as we go through the course. This is an introductory course, and the one thing I would really suggest to you is practice. The more you can practice, the more you can lay the cards out side by side, look at the meanings, look at the pictures, look at what's going on, lay them out side by side and build up the story of what's happening between the cards. The more you can do this, the more you practice with your cards, the quicker you'll become familiar with them and comfortable with them. And in terms of how long that takes to learn, that's really up to you. What I found when I learnt the cards was I literally learnt to read the cards by the method that I'm going to be teaching you through this course. And over time, then, the intuition, the more psychic abilities started to develop. But for me, it was a very systematic process. And by looking at the colours, the symbols, the pictures on the cards, you can become a very, very competent tarot card reader very quickly. And then just start to trust in your intuition and those little feelings, thoughts, words that are coming into your head. And you'll be surprised at the insights that you start to gain. Now, intuition is actually quite important when you're reading the cards, because They are a bridge between yourself and your subconscious mind, or between you, the reader, and the unconscious of the person that you're reading for. So before you start, the one thing I would suggest to you is just to give your cards a really good shuffle. The idea being that you just want to make sure that you've cleared the energies from previous readings or from other people that have handled your cards. So just kind of give them a really good shuffle and imagine that any old energies from previous readings are literally just leaving the cards and floating off into the atmosphere. Or I also use a blue flame from Saint Germain. And this is really brilliant because it takes any negative energy that there might be and converts it into positive. So just imagine any energy that's left over coming out of your cards and going off into the flame to be burnt up. There are various things you can do to cleanse your cards, but actually I find, for me personally, that's the simplest and easiest. When you start to do a reading for yourself or for other people, or when you're learning, it is important just to get yourself in a place where you're calm, centered, relaxed, and you can connect with your cards. So what I would say is, before you start, just take a few moments to take a few deep breaths. Just breathe out any tensions, stress, anything that's been going on during the course of the day. And just breathe in love, light, peace, connection. And just take a few deep breaths, just in and out, with the idea of putting to one side anything that's gone on during the day and just allowing yourself to connect with your cards, to connect with your intuition. You don't really have to do anything special. Just take a few deep breaths until you feel nice and calm, nice and relaxed. And then just kind of give your cards a shuffle. Pick up your cards, give them a shuffle before you start, so that you're just connected with the energies of your cards. You're just connected with the universe. What I always ask then is that any information that's coming through, either for me personally or for somebody that I'm reading for, is coming from a place of highest love, highest truth, highest rightfulness, and for the highest good of all concerned. And when you've just kind of got yourself in that place where you're ready to start, we'll start then with the first of our cards, which is the Fool card from the Major Arcana. So take the Fool card out of your deck, or have a look at it on the picture on the notes, and just notice what you can see in the card. Just notice what's there, what's going on, what's actually happening in the card. The Fool card is the first card in the Major Arcana. It is numbered 0, and as a card, if you look at it, largely it has an awful lot of yellow in the card. Now, yellow is a very bright, sunshiny, energetic card. It's the colour of the solar plexus chakra point, which is the third one up, which is roughly located in the centre of your tummy, roughly by your belly button. And that's about the self. That's about how we express ourselves. So if you look at the card and notice what you can see, what's going on, what's happening, you'll see a figure here, quite well dressed, with a stick slung over his shoulder with a bag on the end of it, walking quite casually towards what looks like the edge of a cliff, although it might just be a little step down, we can't really see that, with a little white dog at his heels. And the Fool card, when you look at it, very much is a bright, energetic card. There is actually a lot of energy in the card. And some of the key words that would be associated with the Fool card is new ideas, childlike ambitions, being carefree, going with the flow, trusting yourself, perhaps dusting off those old dreams, those old ideas, something that you've always wanted to do, and taking that almost spontaneous leap of faith. The Fool is a little bit of heading off into the unknown, maybe letting go of expectations, feeling free to express yourself in what might be considered quite a detached, childlike kind of way. Now, the Fool literally is a card that could appear anywhere in the Major Arcana deck. I mean, it's numbered zero, which is the sign of completion. And with the Fool, somebody may be detaching from worldly values. They may be off on a personal quest. But it has the huge potential of the spirit, of courage, of optimism. With the little bag on the stick, these are his past experiences and memories. And he's taking with him the bare minimum that he needs for this journey, which is really not very much. And the little white dog can perhaps be seen to be warning the figure about the possible impending danger, or might just simply be gleefully jumping alongside, encouraging him every step of the way. It's very much an opportunity for new beginnings, something completely different in your life. Trust in your heart, go with the flow, allow the universe to support you. The Fool represents the sign of Aries, which is the first sign of the zodiac. It's kind of the baby of the zodiac, if you like. When if you think of a small child, they approach every day as a brand new adventure. Every day is exciting, it's adventurous, they live in the now. Now it may be, depending on the other cards that are around it, that you need to add a little bit of logic to your plans, because there is a distinct absence of logic with the Fool card. However, it's important not to allow logic to actually get in the way of you doing something with this new beginning, with this opportunity to follow your heart and do something that you've always wanted to do. So the Fool is actually a very exciting card to have and to start with in the Major Arcana. Now, leave the Fool card out on the desk in front of you, or keep the picture there, because when we've looked at the Magician card, we're then going to kind of put them side by side and see what you notice, see what comes through. Now, the Magician card, which is the next card, is actually numbered one in the Major Arcana. So take the card out, lay it out in front of you, and just have a look at what you can see. Notice the dominant colours. Notice the colours that stand out for you. Notice if there's any feelings come up, or any intuition, any insights, any words, thoughts. If there are, jot them down in your notes, because these will be something that are quite important for you. It may be that they have a message for you. It may be that they're relevant to you in terms of interpreting the cards for you. Now, if we look at what we can see here, again, we have a card that is dominated by the yellow, which is a bright, optimistic, enthusiastic, sunshiny type of card. We see a figure that is standing almost in a... It's almost like he's conducting lightning from heaven down to earth. He's got a rod in his hand. He's drawing energy down from the heavens, straight through, down into the earth. He has a kind of an almost... almost like a glow around him. He's got the symbol of infinity, which is the eight above his head, and also that idea of infinity, the circle, the completeness, is mirrored in the snake around his waist. Now, this is a very interesting card, because when you look at him, he's got white robes, and white generally is a very spiritual colour, and over the top of that, he's got a red cloak. Now, red generally is a colour that's associated with materialism, with money, with the physical, tangible, material world. And on the table in front of him, you have symbols that represent the other four suits. So you've got the cup that represents the symbol of cups for emotions. You've got the wand that represents the fire, the creativity, the work, the action. You've got the pentacle, which is the coins, the money, the earth type things, and the swords, which represent the head stuff, the logic, the intellect and the reasoning. And then there's kind of like a lush, rich garden around him with the lilies and the roses. And the lilies and the roses, again, representing the lilies representing intellect and the rose representing emotions. Now, when you see the magician card, you basically have somebody who knows how capable he or she is of tapping into the universal energies, of drawing those energies into and through them, and then out the other side to be able to convert that into something tangible. The sorts of words here, when you see the magician coming up, that it's saying is your inner abilities, connect with the universe, use and trust your intuition and take action. It's often is saying to people that they probably have far more internal resources, abilities, talents, capabilities than they give themselves credit for. The magician card is very much the card of manifesting, of creating, of feeling that power of the universe surge through you, grounding it and turning it into something constructive and powerful. One of the things with the magician is that it is very important that the intentions are pure, because if the intentions for creation are not pure and the magician is harnessing very, very powerful energies and forces in the universe and the intention isn't pure, then you can end up with somebody that's very manipulative, that's doing things just for ego, for their own personal self. This is a time actually to trust in yourself and be your own guru. You have all the resources that you need, and things that maybe you feel you haven't got as resources, you are easily able to attract the people and the resources. But the magician very much is a card about those inner abilities, those inner strengths, and that ability to decide what you want, to focus on it, allow that energy to come through, and then very much take the inspired action. Now, interestingly then, if you lay those two cards side by side, so lay the Fool next to the magician, and just notice how the two things go together. If you notice the two cards, they are both very bright, yellow, energetic, sunshiny cards. And when you put the two together, you've then got somebody in the Fool who's setting off on a wonderful new journey, new project, following their heart's desire, going with the flow of the universe. And with the magician, you've then got that you've got all the capabilities, all the abilities, everything you need to be able to complete that journey. And actually, what the magician adds to the Fool is perhaps a little bit more focus, because the Fool can be setting off on a wonderful journey without really too much thought about where he or she's going, quite how it's going to unfold. Whereas with the magician, all of that wonderful childlike energy has a little bit more focus and direction. And the magician kind of adds to the Fool, saying, well, yeah, you know exactly where you're going, you know exactly what you're doing, you've got all the abilities, go for it and go and do it. So it's a very powerful combination to have together. And this is one of the best ways to build up your tarot reading abilities, is to start with one card, have a look at it, notice it, see what's going on, get a feeling for it, get an understanding for it, and then put another card side by side and just see how it changes, see how it alters, see what different story you come up with, what different thoughts, feelings you come up with. In this course, we're not really going to deal with the reversals. People do ask me about them, and very often I find with the reversals, they relate to the cards where there is a blockage of some description of the upright card that isn't flowing properly. Now, obviously, there is a lot more to that, but the reversals is a kind of a whole course in itself. However, it is actually very useful with the cards just to turn them round and just to see what you can notice when you turn them round, how the pictures change, how they relate differently to each other. So, for example, if you turn the fool round, he's kind of going off the edge of the cliff almost head first. You've then got the blue at the top, which is much more of the intellect and the logic. And it's really kind of saying, well, yeah, the whole thing is very, very foolhardy. And again, with the magician reversed, instead of the creative energy coming in from the heavens down into the earth, you've then got somebody trying to create from the earth upwards, which is actually how most of us have been taught to set goals. But just to give you an idea with that, so what I would say is just play with them a little bit. Just notice how the pictures change. Notice what different thoughts, feelings, impressions you get as you put the cards side by side. And just jot them down. If you have a tarot journal or a tarot notebook, that would actually be most useful. Now, the next card we're going to talk about is the High Priestess card. Now, she is number 2 in the Major Arcana. So if you take the card out and have a really, really good look at it, notice what you can see. Now, my first impression when I looked at this card, particularly after having done the Fool and the Magician, is that there is a whole different feel to this card. The dominant colours are the blue and white. White being a spiritual colour. Blue is a colour of emotions. It's also the colour of the throat chakra, which is communication. But blue has a much cooler feel to it. It's much more almost as if you're looking at a pond, which is very still on the surface, but then has a huge amount of depth underneath. You've got the black and white with the pillars, and the blue and white of the High Priestess. So we see a figure sitting on a stone between two pillars with a veil behind her that has pomegranates on it. And then directly behind that is all the water, which represents the emotions. You can probably see as you look at the High Priestess as well that there is a lot of moon symbolism. You've got a moon at her feet. You've also got her crown is made up of the two crescents of the waxing and waning moon, and then kind of like the full moon in the centre. She has very much an air of mystery, an air of secrecy, and the High Priestess, although she's shown as a woman, all of these cards can represent character archetypes. They can refer to men or women, although the figures might clearly be one or the other. When you see the High Priestess come up in a reading, or you're looking at the card, the types of keywords, the types of things it relates to, secrecy, things not being as they seem, mystery, intuition, going within, because the veil is actually the very thin veil between the conscious and the unconscious, where we perhaps think it's very difficult to access all these hidden mysteries and all these things that are going on deep in the depths of our emotions. But actually, through silence, contemplation, meditation, these things are not actually that difficult to access. The High Priestess is representing moon cycles, psychic abilities, intuition, the power of the feminine. It's a card that's very much passive, receptive. There's a lot of things hidden. There's a lot of things that you can't initially see. When the High Priestess is coming up in a reading, or is coming up as you're looking at it, she's very much asking you to trust your intuition. Tap into your own inner guidance system through relaxation, meditation. There may well be things hidden in whatever situation you're looking at, and it's quite unlikely that you will have already got the full facts and information to be able to make a decision. You might need to be asking some very probing questions, and sometimes the questions that you need to ask are only coming to you through tapping into your intuition through meditation. Now, again, in a reading, when the High Priestess comes up, she can also represent a third party in a love triangle, or an undisclosed third party who has an impact from a distance on a relationship. It is very, very important, though, that you look at all the other cards that are around before you suggest to somebody that there may be a third party involved in their relationship. You need to be very careful with that, because it may be that there are things that are hidden, things that are not being disclosed, but it may not necessarily be that the person's boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife or spouse is involved with somebody else. So you need to be very careful with these. Take the High Priestess card and put her down beside, first of all, beside the Fool. And you can see there that the whole energy of the Fool has changed, because he's kind of setting off on this wonderful carefree journey, not a care in the world, going with the flow, following the energies. And actually then the High Priestess is kind of saying, well, just hold on a minute. You maybe need to look into other things. You maybe need to use your intuition a little bit more. There may be things that you need to find out or discover before you set off on this journey. And if you have her next to the Magician, say, you've got a very, very powerful combination there, because both of those are tapping in to inner resources, tapping into the intuition. And when you've got the High Priestess that's tapping into all the inner wisdom, and actually then the Magician who is kind of reaching out into the universal energies and drawing in all that energy to actually make things happen. But just kind of notice then how the energy of the cards change. And as I say, this is really the very best way to build up your understanding, is just by laying the cards side by side and see how it changes, how it alters. Now, the next card we're going to talk about is the Empress card. And the Empress card is numbered 3 in the Major Arcana. So take the Empress card out of your deck and lay her down, put her down on the table in front of you, or look at her in the picture, and just notice, what can you see? Well, here we can see a finely dressed woman sitting in a very, very lush outdoor garden with long kind of flowing robes, sitting on rich red and orange cushions. You've got a lot of greenery in the background, water flowing through the card, and wheat all around her. Now, as with all of these cards, there is a huge amount of symbolism in them, which over time we can really look at in a lot more detail, which will add a lot more insight into your readings. As you look at her, what kind of feel do you get? She's looking in the long flowing robes, could almost be pregnant, but she just looks very contented, very serene. She's sitting in a very lush, very abundant, rich garden. The water flowing through is a symbol of abundance, spontaneity. The wheat is also a symbol of abundance. And she's just very comfortable. It's a very material, external sort of comfort, whereas the High Priestess was much more about being comfortable with yourself from the inside. Now, the sorts of words you think of with the Empress: abundance, plenty, success, creativity, productivity, perhaps motherhood, pregnancy and birth. Although, again, look at all the other cards around to see if there are other indications of this. The Empress is pointing to being at one with the earth, female, fertility, sensual pleasures, domestic stability, nurturing yourself and others, and just experience and enjoying life through your senses and your passions. There's very much a balance of colours in the card. You've got the female symbol on the cushion, which is the sign of Venus, the goddess of love. And when you see the Empress come up in a reading, it's a beautiful card to have, because yes, it can be pointing to motherhood, pregnancy, nurturing, but it can also be pointing to just saying everything is likely to turn out much better than you've expected. There's abundance, joy, passion and flow in life generally. There's a feeling of nurturing, whether it's for yourself or for someone else. It's a really lovely card to have. It's well balanced. It's beautiful. So if you take that card and lay it alongside some of the others that we've had, you can see then that next to the Fool, it's going to be saying that everything is going to work out much better than you've expected. Because both the Empress and the Fool card, in a lot of ways, are cards of passion, of spontaneity, of following the heart, following the dream, being connected with yourself and everything that's going on around you. And again, next to the Magician card is also saying to you that whatever you're setting out to do is going to turn out better than you've expected. Now, it's quite interesting when you put her next to the High Priestess, because you very much have the two different sides of the feminine. You've got the deep, mysterious, intuitive, very much inward-looking aspects of the High Priestess, coupled with the sensual, joyful, passionate pleasure and abundance, external things in life, as kind of indicated by the Empress. And again, looking at the colours of the Empress, you've got a balance of colours, the most dominant colour being the yellow, which is again the sun, the earth, its creativity, its fertility. So again, just look at the cards side by side, see how you feel, notice what comes up for you, and just start to build up that story of what's going on for you with those cards. The next card we're going to look at is the card numbered 4 in the Major Arcana, which is the Emperor card. So take the Emperor card out of the deck and have a good look at what you can see. Now here we can see a richly dressed, clearly royal, regal, authoritarian looking figure sitting on a grey stone austere throne. He's richly dressed in red robes, red being very much a material colour. It's a colour of money, of war, of fire, very much a card of being rooted in the physical world. He's wearing a suit of armour underneath, which armour generally, when you see it come up, is some form of protective mechanism. Often it can be protecting the person, it can be protecting them against their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions. He's sitting on a throne in a very, very barren landscape. You've got the ram's heads around, which are indicative of Aries, the sign of Aries, which represents Mars, which is the god of war. And just the whole landscape seems to be very barren, very, there's a lot of orange in the card. Now, it's a very austere card when you look at it. And the Emperor card traditionally has represented a father figure or male energy. It's very much external power, authority, leadership, willpower, self-control acquired through experience, discipline. It's a commanding executive type of person. It's somebody who is very traditional, very governed by rules and regulations, can be somewhat inflexible, although you would hope there would be some strength and fairness in there. The dominant colours being the red and the orange. Red is the colour of the base chakra, which is representing energy, fire, making things happen, material. And the orange is the power, the authority, the outer strength. And this is a figure, when you see this come up, the Emperor may well be a father figure or a male type of figure. It can be somebody with authority, perhaps a doctor or a lawyer. It's making your physical presence and mark in the world. It's external power, strength, presence. This is also someone where rules, discipline and structure are very important and are rigorously imposed upon everyone else. If you kind of think back to when these cards were originally designed, which was at the turn of the 1900s, the role of the male and the female was very specifically defined, in that the female, kind of represented by the Empress, was very loving, caring, giving, nurturing, forgiving, playful, spontaneous, whereas the role of the male was very much more the authoritarian, was the person who created the rules, not only of the society, but also of the family, and was very much more disciplined, rigid, structured, was the person that imposed the rules and also imposed the punishments for rules not being obeyed. Again, remember, these are archetypes and they don't necessarily represent the male and female figures now. Although, if you think about the type of person or situation that the emperor represents, most of us probably know somebody who is like that. Now, again, take the emperor card, lay it alongside the other different cards, and just notice how things change. When you put it next to the fool may be constrained by the rigidity and structure of the rules, but it may also be that it's great to set off in this wonderful direction. However, the fool maybe needs to take some advice, maybe needs to talk to somebody who actually has experience in what they want to do. So just kind of put the emperor next to the other different cards and notice how things change. Notice how you start to get a different feel and start to build it up. Next to the magician, for example, if you have got somebody then who's harnessing the energies of the magician and at the same time has authority, has power, has leadership, you would hope that used for the good, that person could create a fantastic company, an amazing family, could be a great leader of a country or a government, providing it's used for the good. And when you put that next to the High Priestess, if you see that as a situation, you may have a situation where you're dealing with authority, dealing with power figures, and the High Priestess is telling you that in fact you need to also tap into your intuition, make sure you've got all the facts and figures, particularly before you commit yourself to anything. Next to the Empress, you've perhaps got your traditional male and female archetypes. So this is how the whole thing builds up. It's just take a card, put it next to another one, and just see how the stories unfold. How you feel differently, maybe, about each of the cards, and just how it alters and changes the whole thing. Now, the next card we've got is numbered 5, and this is the Hierophant. So if you take the card out, have a good look at it, and just again, notice what you can see. And in this card, we see a figure that looks very much like a religious figure, perhaps a pope, seated on a stone throne between two grey pillars, with two kind of people kneeling in front or much lower down. This is a very papal looking figure. It's got the papal crown, the scepter, forms the hand signal is the gesture called the blessing, which essentially connects heaven and earth. And this is an interesting theme that we see in the Hierophant and is repeated through other cards, where you have a large figure and then two smaller ones in front. And again, we see the roses and the lilies, which is the emotions and the intellect. The Hierophant is a figure that is representing inner power. It's representing conventional, traditional religion, education, upbringing. The Hierophant is somebody who can be an advisor, a counsellor, somebody who's seeking knowledge and wisdom. They tend to have a preference for the orthodox and the conventional, maybe a need to conform and be acceptable. Now, this may be a person or a situation within a traditional belief system. Maybe it's somebody that's part of a team or an organisation where there is quite a rigid, organised structure in place. Now, you see there is a lot of different colours. You've got mostly red, which is the power and the authority. A little bit of white, which is the spiritual. You've got the cold stone grey pillars. Now, grey traditionally is a sign of wisdom, although when you kind of see it in the Hierophant, it's almost sort of saying, well, the wisdom you seek is only accessible by following certain rules and regulations. And when you see the Hierophant come up, it will often have the role of an advisor or a counsellor, a teacher, someone who is an expert in their field. And if it's coming up for you as a person, it's about developing the inner qualities of balance alongside the outer power. It's also dealing with your own belief system, whether this is religious or spiritual. And it's almost being able to look at the conventions and traditions of education, of religion, of your culture that you've grown up with, being able to take from that as a base the parts of that that are useful to you, helpful, and also to be able to move away from the parts that perhaps you feel are very rigid or dogmatic. And it's about being able to develop your own belief system and being able to be true to yourself rather than blindly following the dogma or the rules of other people. So the Hierophant is convention, it's education, and it's being able to find who you are. So when you see the Hierophant coming up in a reading, it may be suggesting that the person is needing to seek advice from someone who is an expert, but perhaps someone who is more a teacher and a guider than necessarily somebody who says, right, well, this is the rules, this is the way that it has to be done, which is more what you would expect to get from the Emperor. And it's about searching in yourself to find who you are. So the next card we have is the Lover's card. Now, this is numbered 6 in the Major Arcana. So again, take the card out. Have a good look at it. Notice what you can see, how it makes you feel, if there's any intuitive flashes or insights that come out of the cards. Like all of the cards in the Major Arcana, the Lover's card is full of symbolism. And we could talk pretty much for an entire hour on each of these cards individually and what they mean in terms of the symbolism. What we see here is we see two figures, a man and a woman, in an outdoor landscape, which is very reminiscent of the Garden of Eden. You see the woman is looking up at the angel, and there's a huge angel above, which is said to be the Archangel Raphael, who is sort of the guardian of the subconscious mind. So you've got the woman looking up at the angel and the man looking across at the woman. You've got the tree of life behind the man and the tree of knowledge behind the woman with the serpent in it. But in this case, the serpent is representing enlightenment rather than downfall. You have the idea again of the angel mediating between the two almost opposing elements. Similar idea that we had within the Hierophant. Now, if you think traditionally the female is associated with emotion, with passion, with feelings, and the male is associated with logic, intellect, reasoning. And in order to be able to come together in any sort of union or coming together or connection, you actually need to have both. So again, the angel is kind of holding both of those in balance. So when you see the Lover's card come up in a reading, what sort of things are you looking for? Well, essentially, it is pointing towards a partnership, a connection, a relationship. It may be pointing towards a physical, sexual relationship or attraction. Love, harmony, unity, cooperation. And interestingly, the Lovers is also about moral choices and value choices. In older, more traditional decks of cards, the Lover's card shows a man that is trying to make choices between two females. Whereas in this particular card, you don't really see that meaning coming through quite so much. I mean, there is very much a balance of colours in the card. And literally, when you see the card come up, there are numerous meanings. In a personal relationship, it can indicate the more physical aspect, including intimacy and sex. It can indicate that a relationship maybe is about to move from a platonic friendship to a physical relationship. Can literally be lovers in the relationship. In a business relationship, it may be that people are coming together and there is also a strong attraction between them. And it's people desiring to be connected in meaningful relationships. Can also reflect the importance of personal values. Ethical choices may be a moral dilemma. It's very important to notice what else you see around the lover's cards, which will indicate what it is pointing towards, whether it's a physical relationship or an attraction, or kind of which level of meaning it's pointing to. If you've got it next to the Fool, this might be a partnership that's setting off in a wonderful new direction, or maybe somebody has literally fallen head over heels in love or in lust with someone. Depending on what you've got around it will indicate whether it is a physical, personal relationship, whether it is a business or a partnership. But the whole idea with it is that it's people coming together where there is an attraction of energies. And where there is a real attraction of energies, then there can be great momentum. And obviously, again, look at the cards around. I mean, if you have, say, next to the Empress card, this might be a relationship that's just starting or blooming or blossoming. It may point towards pregnancy or motherhood. But again, just be a little bit careful with what else you see around that. So again, take the Lover's card, place it next to other cards that you've got in the spread, and just notice how things change for you. And really, one of the easiest ways to learn is just literally lay the cards side by side. Maybe start with two, perhaps three at very most. Just lay them side by side. Notice how the pictures change, how the colours change. Notice how the whole storyline is changing. And perhaps then imagine that that is a situation that's relating to you personally or relating to someone that you know. And just sort of think of, well, what would you say to them? What's going on that you can point to for them? And practice turning them upside down, practice turning them in a reverse position, and just see how things alter from the colours, the symbols, the pictures. And one of the simplest spreads you can do is literally called a three-card spread. And it often relates to past, present and future. But it can equally just relate to three things that are going on and just put them together and build up that story. So the next of the cards that we're going to talk about in the Major Arcana is the card numbered 7. And this is the Chariot card. So again, take the Chariot card out of the deck or have a good look at the picture. And again, just notice what you can see. What you'll probably find is that each time you look at these cards, each time you handle them, you touch them, you'll see something different. You'll notice a different detail. Something maybe will leap out at you. And that's good because that particular thing may have a message for you that's very important. It may be something that you need to focus your energy and your attention on, because these cards really are so rich in symbolism that you could do quite easily a whole course on any individual one. So what do we see here? We see a victorious looking figure, a prince or a monarch or somebody victorious, sitting in a chariot or kind of merging into the chariot, where there are two black and white sphinxes, which are kind of half man, half beast, in front of him. However, the figure is stationary. The chariot is stationary, but the sphinxes have no reins or no visible means of directing them, which essentially means that the figure is having to direct them by the strength and the force and the power of his will. It kind of sits on water, which is indicating that a mastery of the emotions is necessary. It's actually a very balanced card. You've got quite a lot of yellow, which is all about the self, the energy. You've also got quite a lot of blue in the card, which is more intellect and emotions. The black and white sphinxes, again, are balanced duality. black and white, yin and yang, masculine and feminine, intellect and passions. When you see the Chariot card come up, the types of things that are coming to, come to mind with that is it can be a physical journey, forward motion. It's also somebody literally being in control. They're in balance. They are deciding and determining exactly what it is they need to do. They've got focused, directed action, willpower, self-control, discipline, leadership. This is also about charisma and force of personality. It's deciding exactly what you want to do, putting yourself in the driving seat, taking control. And this is also particularly important if you have opposing forces. Now, this may be opposing people. It may be the logic opposing against the emotions. And it's being controlled, focused, directed. There is assertiveness with this card, but there isn't aggression. Although the Chariot is still in the picture, you kind of get the sense that the person is sort of regrouping themselves, focusing their energies and efforts and attention on where they want to go, taking control, and then using the power and force of their mind and the willpower to direct and control that to exactly where they want to go. Now, it can point towards travel, physically and mentally. There may be a change of direction as well as needing more focus in the direction that you're going in. Take the Chariot card, lay it down beside all of the others, and just notice how those meanings begin to change for you. And obviously, as we're building up more of the cards and there are more potential interactions and combinations, we can't really cover them all simply because of the space and the scope of this recording. But this is where, just by practicing them for yourself, you start to see how things all come together and how one card impacts, changes, alters and modifies another card to give you more balance and subtlety of meaning. So the next card we're going to talk about is the Strength card. And this is numbered 8 in the Major Arcana. And the Strength is a beautiful card. It's a really, really lovely card. Here you see a figure all in white, which is a very spiritual colour. Again, we have the repeated symbol of the infinity, which we saw in the Magician. And you see this big lion that she's kind of stroking his head, stroking his chin. The lion, although he's looking a little bit subdued, he seems to me to be kind of looking up at the woman with love, with trust, with empathy. And this is a card of strength, of empathy, of understanding, cooperation, of harmony, of being totally at peace with yourself. And it is a card of total trust, because the lion is such a big vicious animal that he could turn on her quite easily and have her for lunch. The Strength is about your inner strength. It's coming from a place of love, gentleness, trust, cooperation. It's talking about the strength of the feminine and the strength of those inner energies. And all the yellow around is also relating to connecting and communicating from the inside and being in touch with who you are. And really, when you see the Strength coming, it's saying to you, you have all the inner strength, all the inner wisdom, the resources, again, everything you need internally. And it's important to approach things and people from a much more softly, softly approach. You'll get better results by using tact, understanding, empathy, friendship and love than you will do by using aggression and force. It might be that you need to see things from the viewpoint of other people. Perhaps perhaps you need to have a pure intention for the outcome. And it's important for you to be clear in what you want to achieve, and being mindful of the outcome of other people, so that you can actually bring about a harmonious situation of cooperation where everyone wins in the situation. And the strength is also saying that you have the inner strength to overcome any external challenge that may come your way. Now, the next card we have in the Major Arcana is the Hermit card. Now, if you take the card out and have a look at it, it's numbered 9. And this, in some ways, is quite a sad, lonely looking card. It's a very bluey grey card. You see a grey figure with a stick, very kind of dull, dark blue background to it. And he just seems to be standing on top of this very desolate, barren, snowy, mountainous situation. And literally the only light you can see is the light that's coming from the lantern. And in some ways, for a lot of people, the Hermit can be quite a sad card. But as with everything with the tarot cards, there is duality to them. When you see the Hermit coming up, it may be pointing towards solitude, isolation, perhaps a need for taking time to look inwards, to reflect on who you are, just to spend some time solely and totally with you. And for some people, this can be an incredibly difficult thing to do, particularly in our sort of modern world where everything is so busy and so frantic and so hectic. The lantern is offering a single light in the darkness of the rest of the card, and it's very much a symbol of hope, of light at the end of the tunnel. It's about being on your own with yourself, your thoughts, your feelings. This may be through choice, or it may be enforced. And it is a card of reflection, looking inward. That period of reflection may be a forced isolation, which some people might find quite difficult to do. And the light is offering you, going forward, truth, wisdom. It's lighting the way to the place you want to go, which may be physical or it may be spiritual. If you can make friends with yourself and embrace the energy of the Hermit card and just be able to enjoy that peace and that solitude that comes with being entirely on your own, it doesn't have to be permanent, but it's just something that is a period of time that would be incredibly useful to you. So just taking the Hermit card and laying it beside different individual cards that we've already had, you can actually see then how it begins to very much alter the meanings of the cards, particularly if you put it next to bright, lively, outgoing cards like the Empress or the Fool or the Magician, which may be something that is needed as part of this journey. If you put it next to, say, the High Priestess, you've actually got two cards that are very internal and very inwardly focused, which can be a very good thing. And then at some point, you need to put some action to it with moving forward. Now, our next card is the card number 10 in the Major Arcana. And this is the Wheel of Fortune, which again is a fascinating card to look at. When you look at the card, the sorts of colours that seem to stand out are the yellows of the figures in each of the corners. You've got a lot of blue sky. You've got the wheel itself, which, if you look at it, has the same letters on it as on the scroll, which is on the High Priestess's lap. And looking at it one way, you've got Tarot, T-A-R-O. And looking at it the other way, you've got Torah, T-O-R-A, which is the book of hidden knowledge, hidden mysteries. The Wheel of Fortune, you can see the different symbols in each corner. You've got the bull, the angel, the lion, and the eagle. basically representing the four elements of earth, air, fire and water. Now, the Wheel of Fortune, when this comes up, it's a card that does actually have a little bit of an element of luck or fate or destiny with it. And it's often meaning that literally that Wheel of Fortune is changing for somebody. There is a change in fortune, and kind of depending on what else is around that will point to whether that is something positive or whether that's going to be something challenging. It can point to opportunities, new cycles. With the circle, you have the idea of completeness. So something going around in a complete circle, cycles ending, new ones beginning. And as with the Wheel of Fortune, yes, there are opportunities coming, because there may just be that little bit of a kind of a twist of fate with it as well. It's very important to see what else you've got around the Wheel of Fortune to see whether this is something that's constructive or whether it's something that is a little bit on the challenging side. And again, often people will think, oh, the Wheel of Fortune, everything's going to change for the better. And it may well be the case that it is. I remember also from one reading I did for a lady, the cards were showing she had quite a lot of money that was coming to her that she knew about and was expecting. And it had the Wheel of Fortune, and it also had another card next to it, which indicates money potentially being tied up or lost. And I sort of jokingly said to her, well, when all your money comes through, you probably want to treat yourself to a nice holiday somewhere and a nice break. And suddenly got something leap in my head. And I just kind of half jokingly said to her, well, if you are, though, going off on holiday, I'd be a little bit careful about Las Vegas. That might be one to stay away from. And I don't know where that came from. I think that was a real kind of intuitive thing. And she looked at me and I thought, I've obviously hit a mark here. Because to me, what that was saying was her money was coming through the turn of the wheel, almost quite literally, potentially she could lose that money that was coming to her. So the Wheel of Fortune, very much look at what's round it. If you've got very positive, constructive cards, then I would say to somebody, go with the flow, see what's coming, see what's going to be presented to you, because it's looking really good. If you've got something that's looking more challenging around it, you might want to just wait and see what unfolds before you make any kind of major decisions with something. The next card in this section is card numbered 11, which is the Justice card in the Major Arcana. So again, take the card out, and here we see a regal looking figure of Justice sitting between two pillars with sword in one hand and the scales in the other hand. The colours of it, you have the stone stark grey pillars. You also have the rich red of the cloak, which is very material, very in the external world. And as is the kind of the reddy purpley cloak behind, it's kind of bridging between the more spiritual and the more material. But the biggest balance is the red. Now, the green around, this is a colour of nature or the heart chakra. So this is where you would kind of hope that there would be love, understanding, compassion, fairness with the Justice. And holding the sword and the scales of balance, which traditionally are signs of fairness, of balance, of justice. And when you see the Justice card come up in a reading, it can literally be something to do with something legal, courts, official, justice. It may be a situation of mediation. And again, you would hope that there was balance and fairness there. Now, the double-edged sword literally can fall in either direction. And it's a very powerful card, and the person needing it is going to have strength and courage in whatever they're undertaking. It might be a legal or official situation, might be mediation or discussions. And one of the things with the Justice card is that things will turn out for the highest good. And the phrase "justice will be done" comes to mind. What is important, though, to remember with this is that although justice will be done, that is not necessarily in favour of the person who's drawing the card. It may be, it may not be. And this is where it is really, really important to notice what else is around as to whether, if it is an official or legal situation, the outcome is in favour of the person that you're reading for, or whether justice being done means that the outcome is for the highest good. And it is very important just to look at what else there is around it. And in, as a person as well, it can be pointing to someone who has a real sense of justice, fairness, maybe a huge desire to champion the underdog or to support a cause they have complete passion for. This is a card of logic. There's no place for emotion. And it may also be asking you to look at your situation and ask yourself whether you are really being balanced and objective in your approach. So again, putting the justice card beside the various cards that we've already had, you can begin to build up the picture and the story of what's going on. Now, the last card in this particular section is the Hanged Man. And this is number 12 in the Major Arcana. So again, take the card out, have a good look at it. And here we see a figure hanging by his foot, upside down, from a T-shaped cross or tree. This is actually a pose, which is quite an old meditation pose, and it's called the Tao. Again, balance of colours. This, interestingly, is one of the cards that when people think of tarot, when there's very little knowledge, they tend to think of, oh dear, oh scary. But actually, if you look at the figure, he looks very serene, very calm, very balanced, literally kind of hanging around, watching the world go by. Pardon the pun, I couldn't really think of anything more appropriate to say about that. The Hanged Man is a card of perhaps delays, patience required, asking you to go with the flow. The expression of the Hanged Man is very calm, very serene, almost as if he's just quietly waiting for something to happen. There's no resistance. It's almost a sense of contentment. And this can be about delays, maybe the need to let go of old stuff, just to go with the flow, be patient, perhaps stop pushing and forcing, and just let matters take their own natural course. It's an element of contemplation, and perhaps the solutions lie in thought and meditation rather than busyness. Or maybe there is a need for an entirely new perspective. Because certainly if you're hanging upside down by your foot, looking at the world and looking at your problem, you're going to see it in a very, very different light. So again, take the Hangman card, lay it beside the other different cards that we've had. Use the very simple three-card spread. So of the 13 cards we've had so far for practicing, take those 13 cards, shuffle them up, mix them all up together, and then just pick three lay them down on the desk in front of you, just kind of fan them out a little bit, pick three, turn them over and just put them side by side and just have a look at the story that's unfolding. Lay them out from left to right. You can, if you wish, look at them as a past, present and future, which is past on the left, present in the centre and future on the right, or just simply look at them as three cards to give you an overview of where things are up to now. So that's the first half of the Major Arcana. There's been quite a lot to take in. What I would say to you now is just take your cards, have a good look at them, practice, lay them out side by side. Perhaps come back and have a listen to this audio again, or have a look at the notes. I'm Amanda Goldston, learntarotonline.com. I'll be back with you again very soon with the next cards in the series of the Major Arcana. And in the meantime, if you'd like to go and perhaps have a look at my website, contribute to the blog, it's www.learntarotonline.com. I'll be back with you again very soon.